The following audio is from my telephone interview with Tom Hay, where he discusses his experience as a Quaker college student during the Vietnam War, the conscientious objector process, and what he would have done if he would have been drafted.
First of all, just so you know what my experience was, obviously I had to register. Everybody has to register. And on the card, I wrote, even though the question wasn't asked, on the card I wrote, I'm going to be a conscientious objector, so that if it came time to have to defend myself in front of a draft board, I would have a record of it right from the start.
Yeah.
One of the things, and you couldn't just say you're a conscientious objector and people would say, okay, you had to go in front of a draft board that was, five people. You had to write a paper, and then you had to go in front of the draft board to defend your position and answer questions. And draft boards tended to take a skeptical view of people who sort of said, well, now, or if it came across, well, all of a sudden I'm a conscientious objector,
Yeah.
Now that I've been drafted, I'm a conscientious objector routine.
Yeah.
So I did that. And then, as I told you in my email, in the middle they went to the lottery system, and my number was 254. I'll always remember it. And the most that they were going to take were numbers 1 through 120. So I had the luxury of, as I said, of just walking away and planning my life without having to worry about being drafted or anything. But I still remember, when the day came to draw the numbers out of the big drum, I can still picture it, all the boys, I went to Earlham, and all the boys of draft age that year gathered into a room, and it was just the boys. There were no women there. And I can still see the faces of the people who got numbers like 1, 2, 3, or whatever. As I said, in a nutshell, that was my experience. The attitude towards the war in the country really changed as time went on. Initially, people who were against the war were pretty much looked down on as being unpatriotic or chicken or, whatever, somehow just not quite adequate, either in terms of their love of country or their manliness. There were certainly I had friends who were a little bit more extreme than me. They tore up their draft cards.
Yeah.
And that was against the law. Mm. And they did it publicly or on purpose in front of an official. And some of them did time in jail, which was brutal. Some of them were, horribly mistreated by other prisoners because, again, they were considered to be cowards and unpatriotic. And so that was kind of at the beginning of the war in the mid-60s to sort of late 60s. When I was at Earlham, 69 to 73, and 71, Kent State happened. And there's a lot of protests on campus. Richmond, Indiana was at that point, I don't know what the story is now, but at that point it was very conservative town. In fact, a number of people earned a living at the munitions factory in Richmond, and people of Richmond had no patience or tolerance for the hippie Quakers at Earlham. And when you walk downtown as a college student, and, we had long hair and, et cetera, et cetera.
You had long hair?
Oh, I had hair down to my shoulder, stood out.
Yeah.
And it could be a pretty hostile experience. And you would go into stores, and they refused to serve you. And one time when I was walking back from town, some of the, the people who lived, some of the Richmond folks, walked with me and sort of walked around me and threatened to beat me up and all the rest of it. And, one time when I walked downtown, somebody threw a beer can at me and hit me in the head. It was not a very comfortable experience in Richmond, Indiana.
Sounds like it.
But then as the war went on and more news came out about what the real story was about the war and the way the war had been misrepresented about the government, then marched on, I went on to one of the marches on Washington. It was, it would have been the one, I guess, in 70, I guess they're 70 or 71. Anyway, it was one of the big ones, 500,000 plus people.
Okay.
So that's sort of that part. You know, so what would I have done if I had been drafted? Well, I would have followed through with my status as a conscientious objector, which would have meant I would have had to defend myself. I would have been, the cards would have been stacked in my favor coming from Southern Chester County, which yeah. has so many Quakers, and being a Quaker, of course, with their tradition of pacifism and not participating in war, I think that there is very little chance, in fact, that I wouldn't have been granted my conscientious objector status. But it really varied throughout the country. In some areas of the country, draft boards basically just didn't grant conscientious objector status, period.
Really? Where would the draft board have, where would you have gone to appeal to a draft board? Just out of curiosity. Like, where was, like, I guess what I'm asking, if for this process of you to appeal to, you had to talk to this board, where would you have gone? In Richmond?
Oh, some place here in Chester County.
Okay.
I'm not quite sure. Probably in Westchester.
All right.
Is probably where it would have been.
Okay.
My brother went through it. My brother's 4 years older than me.
Mm-hmm.
So he was drafted, and he did have to defend himself. So to the extent that his example is worthwhile, he was granted his conscientious objector status. So he had to do 2 years of alternative service. And I don't know whether... Well, I can't tell you. I think what you do is presented options, and they approved one. I don't think they just sent you to do something. I think you offered, well, I'll do this, and they either said, well, that's okay, or it's not okay. But he ended up working as an orderly in a hospital for 2 years in Denver, Colorado. And basically, you do this, and you get paid minimum wage or whatever. And so he did that for 2 years. And his experience was, you know, off and on okay and not okay,
yeah.
You know. People found out he was, again, he's 4 years older than me, so he did it at a time when people were really, you know, pretty antagonistic towards conscientious objectors. And so that's what he did. And to be completely honest, Jack, since I never really had to think about it, I really never did. Think about it. I don't quite know what I would have done for my 2 years, but I obviously would have come up with something.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, it was a, you know, I think you've, I mean, I don't know how far into it you are, but it's really a fascinating period of time. And the people that I kind of remember are, yes, the conscientious objectors, but also, you know, those people who tore up their draft cards and went to jail, and other people who fled to Canada, and then if they came back, they faced criminal prosecution. I remember there was a period of time where it wasn't clear whether people who had fled to Canada, if they came back, whether they would be prosecuted and sent to prison or not. Eventually, a decision was made that they wouldn't be, but there's a period of time there where that wasn't clear whether they could come back into the country.
It would be a scary time for those who did it, definitely.
Yeah, so that's, you know, I had the incredible good fortune, of course, and sort of living within communities both at Westtown and at Earlham, which were entirely supportive of my attitudes and my beliefs. So even though when I went out into the quote-unquote world at large, such as down into Richmond, etc., I didn't have the experience, which many other people did, of being in communities where they were isolated within their own community. I had the good fortune of just having a tremendous amount of support.
Yeah, well, yeah, that definitely helps a lot.
So,